and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome to the Local Edition, news and information keeping you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Coming up, we'll do a recap on Senator Kirsten Gillibrand's visit to Monticello on Friday. We'll also get the latest local news from the Sullivan County Democrat. Local news roundup coming up at the end of the program. We've got our weekly check-in with Sullivan County. We'll be talking to Laura McKay, coordinator of Child Support Enforcement Unit at the county. But first, let's continue to look at news out of Albany. New York's legislative leaders kicked off what's expected to be an intensive 2 weeks of state budget negotiations today, with a public meeting to lay out their priorities on housing, crime, taxes, and other issues as talks with Governor Kathy Hochul intensify. Karen DeWitt has more.
Thank you all for joining us for this year's mothership. The next step as we move forward in our budget process.
The meeting of the General Conference Committee, nicknamed among lawmakers the mothership, marks the start of the end phase of budget talks, when legislative leaders start making deals with the governor in order to agree on a spending plan. Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, both Democrats, already detailed their plans on March 15th. In them, they reject several key proposals by Governor Hochul, who's also a Democrat, including further revisions to the state's controversial bail reform laws. They ended many forms of cash bail. The Senate and Assembly budgets also do not include Hochul's proposal to allow the state to override local zoning laws to build more housing, and they said no to the governor's plan to alter the rules to allow more charter schools, and they're against raising tuition at public colleges and universities. Stewart-Cousins says they want to instead direct monetary support directly to campuses.
We're also investing in higher education while rejecting tuition increases for SUNY and CUNY.
Democratic leaders also are rejecting Hochul's plan to ban flavored tobacco products, including menthol cigarettes, says Speaker Hastie.
I don't think there's enough support to support the governor's proposal, at least amongst our members at this point.
Republicans, who are in the minority party in both houses, say they disagree with many items in the Democrats' plans. Senate GOP leader Robert Ort says he backs Hochul's proposal on bail reform. It would give judges more discretion when deciding on charges of serious crimes. But he says even the governor doesn't go far enough to reverse what he calls the law's harmful effects.
We need to address violent crime and the fallout of this disastrous bail and discovery reforms.
Ort says the Democrat spending plans also don't address the $11 billion unemployment insurance debt that New York owes to the federal government. Currently, the state is requiring that private businesses contribute more to pay that back. Republicans also object to new taxes in the Democratic legislators' budgets. Both the Assembly and Senate want to raise income taxes on New Yorkers making more than $5 million. Assembly Minority Leader Will Barkley is objecting to the Assembly Democrats' proposal to impose an 8% tax on subscriptions to streaming services like Netflix and Amazon Prime.
With the proposals to tax streaming services, the state is now going to charge you to watch Ted Lasso.
With the bigger-than-usual differences between the governor's and legislators' spending plans, all say it will be a challenge to get everything done by the March 31st deadline. Speaker Hastie says he won't mind if the spending plan is a little bit late.
I've always felt a good budget is more important than an on-time budget.
Hochul has already said she also would rather get the budget agreement she wants, even if it comes later in April. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
I want to thank Karen DeWitt for that reporting, and I want to pause for just one moment here to share with you some additional reporting that Karen DeWitt did last week specifically on that bail reform issue.
The Senate and Assembly, in their budget plans, did not include a proposal by Hochul to make more changes to the state's 2019 bail reform laws. They ended most forms of cash bail. The governor would like to amend the law to make it easier for judges to set bail for more serious crimes. Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says she wants hard evidence that the bail law changes really are contributing to a recent crime spike. She points to a study by John Jay College released March 14th. 14th. It shows bail reform lowered recidivism rates for those charged with misdemeanors and nonviolent crimes. And Stuart Cousins says judges have always been able to set bail for violent felonies.
Violent offenders have always been bail eligible. And that's what I think people have not understood.
Thanks again to Karen DeWitt. And again, we will continue watching this budget process in New York State and letting you know where it stands. And after it's all done, what actually wound up going into the budget here on the Local Edition. For now, it's time to get a little more local on the Local Edition. If you're a Sullivan County resident who receives child support payments through a New York State issued debit card, according to Sullivan County Coordinator for Child Support Enforcement, Laura McKay, you'll soon need to use a new debit card. The state is issuing a new Way to Go card. That's Way, the number two, Go card for child support payments. Radio Catskills' Patricio Rabayo spoke to Laura McKay about the new card, and he started off by asking her why it's changing.
This change is happening at this time because the state has chosen to implement a new debit card vendor.
Now, for those who are maybe not be familiar with this card, how is the card used and how does money get into the card?
Okay. A child support account would be set up when there's a court order for child support and the non-custodial parent would be ordered to pay a child support obligation. So upon payment to an account, it would apply and then disperse to the payment method, in this case, a debit card. So it would disperse to the Bank of America debit card right now. But as we talked about, there is going to be a transition to the new Way to Go card.
And having a card like this, I'm sure, makes things easier when the situation between parents aren't great and there is the need for child support. You have that extra barrier.
Absolutely.
Now, when those who have a card now, can they continue to use the card even after March 30th if they have money in the account?
Right. Their existing debit card from Bank of America, they can continue to use until the balance is zero.
Okay. You have the new card. When can the new debit card begin accepting deposits?
That official date is March 31st of this year.
And all the information to make the deposits, I'm assuming, comes with the new debit card and how someone can deposit money into the account.
Yes, they'll have all the information will be included with it.
Now, can you transfer funds from the old card? Let's say you have money left over there to the new debit card. Is that allowed?
No, that will not be allowed. It will be separate. You'll have to use the balance on the old card up. And at some point, they will give a deadline for that. But they haven't issued that yet.
And where can you use this new Way to Go card? Where can it be used? Can you use it at the grocery store or like a shopping or?
Yes, absolutely. It can be used anywhere where MasterCard debit cards are accepted, which will, you know, be a pretty, wide array of choices. And in fact, many grocery stores and convenience stores will offer cash back without a fee when you make a purchase.
Now, talking about fees, is since it's like a debit card, can you go to an ATM and take money out? And if so, are there any fees associated with that?
If Allpoint and MoneyPass ATMs are used, which are available across the country, there will not be a fee.
Laura, before we go, is there anything else I have not touched on that you want our listeners to know about?
Yes, actually I do. I just want to explain the importance out there. If you have a child support case, whether you're a custodial parent or guardian or a non-custodial parent, it's so very important to update your address information, mailing and residential, your phone numbers, email addresses are great too. Just so that we can be able to contact you, because often things can happen with a case and we want to reach out just to, you know, double check, you know, some information, and just having that is so important. So what I want to bring out today is we've developed a new message line that's available 24/7. The phone number is 845-807-0346. If you call this phone number, we can update information when you leave it on the secure line, or you can request a phone call back and we'll call you back within 24 to 48 hours. It's a great way, you know, to convey information. You can also call the New York Child Support Helpline at 888-208-4444. 1-800-875. That's another option for updating information on your case. The other thing that I just thought of is that we have direct deposit to a bank account as an option for payments to disperse. So if you're getting this notice about this new debit card and you decide, hey, I'd like to change the direct deposit, now would be a great time to request the direct deposit form and, you know, get that into play.
Laura, can you give me that number again, that 24-hour, 7-day-a-week number for a parent to call?
Yes, it's 845-807-0346.
We're talking to Laura McKay, coordinator of the Child Support Unit. Thank you so much for letting us know about this new child support debit card that's on its way. It should be in the mailboxes soon and start being used on March 31st. Thank you so much for talking to us about this important issue.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
And thanks so much, Laura McKay. Thank you to Patricio for that report. Stay right where you are. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have more local news.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of 2 Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's nearly time to blast off with the Retro Cocktail Hour. Daryl Brogdon here, inviting you to drop in at the Underground Martini Bunker for classic tiki tunes, private eye jazz, swinging movie music, and other stereo overstimulation. The Retro Cocktail Hour.
Wednesday night at 8 on Radio Catskill.
Forget the seatbelts. Fire up the cocktail shaker.
Join me, Staff Sergeant Doug Sandberg, for a very special Women's History Month edition of Let's Talk Vets. We'll hear from and about some very remarkable women who did not ask permission, did not wait for direction, they just saw what needed to be done and did it. Tune in, you might learn something. Let's Talk Vets, Wednesday, 7 p.m. on Radio Catskill. Listen on air, on your phone or smart speaker, or online at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to the Local Edition, news and information keeping you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. And here in Sullivan County, Junior New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand actually stopped by. She was in Monticello on Friday, and this is just 1 week after Senior Senator Chuck Schumer was in Monticello. Schumer, you may recall, visited the Sullivan County District Attorney's Office to reiterate his call for the county to be designated a high-intensity drug trafficking area. That was Friday, March 10th. This past Friday, the 17th, Senator Gillibrand visited the Hudson Valley VA clinic near the Government Center in Monticello to talk about the PACT Act. That's the Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxins Act, touted as a historic move towards comprehensive health care for veterans. The PACT Act expands VA health care and benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits and other toxic substances. Since it was signed by President Biden, veterans and survivors have filed more than 1 million claims, a more than 20% increase in claims from the previous year. The bill was signed into law by President Biden last August, and it passed in both the House and the Senate with bipartisan support. And there was some bipartisanship on display on Friday in Monticello as Congressman Mark Molinaro of New York's 19th District joined Gillibrand in voicing support for local vets while also saying his partnership with Gillibrand will continue. Here is Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
We've been working on this bill for a long time. In fact, the first bill I ever introduced in the Congress was the Blue Water Navy Vets Bill, because during Vietnam War, members of our service were exposed to Agent Orange, but a lot of people were denied the coverage when they came home because they didn't serve in the right place. But in fact, they were exposed to Agent Orange, whether you're on an aircraft carrier, whether you're on an aircraft. And in fact, people who then worked on those aircraft for decades after were also exposed because the Agent Orange just stayed on that aircraft. So we got a Blue Water Navy Vets Bill done. This legislation corrects all the wrongs of the past. And so for any service member, any veteran who is exposed to any type of toxin is now covered under this legislation. We heard during the Gulf War and the Iraq wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that millions of service members were exposed to toxins because they served next to burn pits. These burn pits were dug in almost every camp all across the globe, and every matter of waste was thrown into them, from electronics to building materials to food waste to human waste to medical waste, and then all burned on fire with jet fuel. Well, the toxins that were created were very similar to the toxins that were created when the towers fell. And those towers were lit on fire by jet fuel. And so we knew from the 9/11 experience that these cancers are directly caused from those toxins. So this bill created a presumption that said if you served, if you were exposed, you are covered, and you don't have to be the one to prove what toxins were released, what was burned, what days you were exposed, which is a typical MO for a lot of VAs. So we made sure that everyone was covered and that nobody could be denied. This bill is now going to help about 3.5 million veterans around the country who were likely exposed from these conflicts and ones before. If you need help, my office is here to help you. You can email us at casework@gillibrand.senate.gov. We will ask you to sign a release, which allows us to actually represent you and speak on your behalf with the VA, with any agency, any place that you deserve benefits from. We can work on your behalf. You can also get help from the VA directly. Their website is va.gov/PACTPACT. You can also call the VA at 1-800-MY-VA-411. So those are the quickest ways to get help if you're not getting it. If you've applied in the past and you were denied, you can apply again. Because this law, they now have to cover you. And if anyone denies you, you call me, because that's not going to be tolerated. So I now would like to bring up our Congressman, Mark Molinaro, who's been a great partner in the House and in local government for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. First, let me offer, this is the first time that you and I have been in district. Well, your district is much larger than mine, as it's the entire state, but together. I do want to take this opportunity. Senator Gillibrand was once my Congresswoman Gillibrand, and we worked very closely together. And it's a pleasure now to represent the district in most of the district that you once represented. And that partnership continues. And I want to say that to all of you here. That partnership continues, especially for ensuring those men and women who return from service have access. And so while I'm without a doubt confident that if you reach out to Senator Gillibrand's office, she's going to knock down a few doors. But if for some reason you had to call my office too, we're going to be working, obviously, to provide access and to support you. And first and foremost, to the men and women who work at the VA, both here and throughout the network, we extend our appreciation and thanks. It is a tremendous job to care for those men and women who sacrifice in service to this country. To those men and women who did serve and are with us, we thank you, and that certainly is just not sufficient enough.
Congressman Mark Molinaro of New York's 19th District at Monticello's Hudson Valley VA Clinic on Friday, one of the local officials joining New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand as she talked about the PACT Act and our local clinic for the VA. More information about the PACT Act and VA benefits is at va.org. Sullivan County Veterans Service Agency can be reached at 845-807-0233. That's 807-0233, or at the county website, sullivanny.us. And now for some more on this and other local news that the Sullivan County Democrat has been covering, let's go to Joe Abraham at the Democrat for our weekly news roundup. Welcome back, Joe.
Hey, it's always good to join the local edition.
There you go. Thank you for being here with us. And I know you were there at the Hudson Valley VA Clinic in Monticello. Senator Gillibrand was there. And I also know that you spoke to the current head of the Sullivan County Veterans Service Agency, correct?
Yes, I spoke with the director, Stephen Walsh, and he had said that since the PACT Act sort of went into effect, the over 150 claims that his office has submitted with that, he says has been adjudicated efficiently, effectively, and correctly so far. And a couple of the big things he said is he said it really increased the number of traffic that's coming through the office. He also said their claims submitted in all of their VA actions have quadrupled since this became law. And he said it's done a very good job of reaching the veterans community, stirring awareness, and stated that they were very thankful for that. The other big thing it did is you always talk to a lot of veterans around here at different events and stuff, and you always kind of notice it's the older population of veterans who are sort of around. And one thing that this has done, because it also deals with, like, burn pits and some of the exposure to toxins that people had in the Gulf War and the most recent Iraq and Afghanistan wars is it's brought the younger veterans into the office to kind of seek assistance for that, which at the same time kind of also exposes them to all of the different resources that they have available to them through the Veterans Service Agency, which has been sort of an, you know, obviously, I want to say like an unintended blessing in a way of, like, you know, obviously the situation for them coming there, having issues with health care, and, you know, because of these exposures is not what you wish anyone would have to deal with. But, you know, if you look at any silver lining, it's that now they're getting familiar with the Veterans Service Agency, who's not only helping them with this, but also, you know, letting them know, like, we do these other things that also are supportive to our local veterans. And, you know, hopefully we'll continue to build those relationships in this whole process.
And we know that getting vets to actually come in for the services that are available is as much of an issue as vets, you know, being able to get the services they are due. And there's often problems with that as well, which is part of what the PACT Act was trying to address. I know that because I listen to Let's Talk Vets, which we have on here, Radio Catskill, the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. So I'm just putting a shout out for that, especially because Staff Sergeant Doug Sandberg, host of that program, is on top of these burn pits issues with some amazing coverage. But I'm curious, before we leave this topic, did you happen to talk to any of those vets who were on hand on Friday? Did you get their take of the whole having a senator drop in to talk about this?
Yeah, I mean, from what I've gathered, it seemed like it was a pretty positive response. I mean, some of the things that were spoken out loud and during the question and answer period and just talking, you know, there was obviously, I think, some frustrations about past experiences before this went into effect. Because, you know, as Senator Gillibrand had said, it used to be that a lot of times the VA and other places would try to ask these veterans to prove that they were sort of, you know, they were exposed to all this stuff and when they were exposed and what was burned and putting that kind of burden of proof on them. Whereas with this, you know, it's more of a presumptive thing that, you know, they have been exposed and let's help them type of thing. So changing that mentality, because there were definitely a lot of frustrations, I think, with people just in the past who maybe were unsuccessful in trying to get this help that they need for their health care.
Okay, and on to other stories that you're covering, I hear that there's a shakeup or at least a change coming at SUNY Sullivan. What's going on there?
Sure. So at the Thursday's Board of Trustees meeting, they meet every 2 months, my staff writer, recently promoted editor Derek Kirk, was at the SUNY Sullivan board meeting, and VP of Academic and Student Affairs, so this is the second in command to President Jake Wayans, Mark Singer, had announced he was resigning from his position, or would be resigning from his position. He was just named the VP last February, and in some of his quotes he was saying that resources were not what they needed to be. There's been a lot of news lately with the governor and the proposed budget and some possible loss of aid or cutting of aid for community colleges. I believe it could be as much as 20%. You know, there was some frustrations with that or some, you know, disappointment with that Singer had expressed. He had told the board that the next step forward for the college to alleviate these challenges would likely require, you know, greater investment like local workforce development, more of an emphasis on hospitality and tourism programs. And the board wished Singer well in his next journey, which for him will be continuing his career at the Northampton Community College in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So not too far away, a couple hours to our south. And Singer had told us that he said, quote, "I think over the next few years you'll see some changes." And he said the best thing, you know, that I did here was to get people to change their minds, to think about where the ball was going to be, you know, looking at this down the road. So there is uncertainty with community colleges in the state, not where there are necessarily any risk of closure or whatever, but that 20% could be a really significant cut of aid that these colleges would get. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, and it's been something that's been talked about for a few years. I think there's been talks about possible cuts to the budgets of these colleges, but for some reason in the past there's been some, you know, saving graces or whatnot, whereas with this one there seems to be some pretty significant concerns. So we'll have to watch how that plays out at the state level, whether or not they actually cut that because, you know, the budgets are still getting all worked out. So,
yeah, New York State budget deadline is April 1st. Governor Hochul has already made intimations that, you know, maybe they won't even make that deadline. But this is interesting if there really is that type of cut for community colleges. It's kind of hard to picture why, considering the role that community colleges have played statewide, but nationally in terms of, you know, helping the economy, helping people get going, get started with their lives or restarted with their lives. There's a big role that community colleges play in that. So we'll definitely keep an ear out for further fallout from the budget. And we will be talking to folks and covering what may go into the budget. And then after it passes, what did go into budget. So we will be on top of this here at Radio Catskill as well. And something else that you're on top of is local business owner Butch Resnick in the legal system. What's the latest on that story?
Sure. So just for some context, back in December, Resnick, who was very well known in the Mountaindale-Fallsburg area, he was credited in a way with revitalizing Mountaindale with a lot of the properties he owned. And he also operates several businesses across Sullivan County. In December, he turned himself into authorities after being accused of money laundering in a federal criminal complaint stemming from a year-long investigation by the FBI. And as an update to that, his attorney confirmed to us that he has entered a guilty plea to the charge of conducting an unlicensed money-transmitting business. Just more context, allegations in the court documents claim that from at least around August 2019 to in or about November 2020, they claim that Resnick, quote, knowingly conducted, controlled, managed, supervised, directed, and owned all and part of an unlicensed money transmitting business affecting interstate and foreign commerce. They claim that he allegedly transmitted a total of approximately $1,140,000 in funds. So pretty much what the result of this is, or to, when you're charged with this type of offense, is that the individual would have to then forfeit any and all of the property, real and personal, involved in the said offense, or sum of money or currency representing the amount of property involved in the offense or whatnot. So I don't have the total as far as what would be owed, but his attorney did tell us that they will ask the court to find that he was minimally involved and that he intends to satisfy his forfeiture obligation before sentencing and that no assets will be forfeited. So we'll be watching that. The Shawangunk Journal, I'll give them a shout-out, another one of our media pals, yeah. They actually had a story about this about a week sooner. And they broke it about the guilty plea. I believe they claimed in their story that he'd be back in court in, I think, June 23rd is the date of when sentencing would be. So, and they had a very nice story, too, so I'll also shout them out and say that people can look at that as well. So that's sort of, at this point, we'll see what sentencing is, but it looks like I said, he's taking steps as a business person to deal with what is required through the forfeiture because of the charges. So as of now, it's just a guilty plea and to that one charge, and then we'll see what happens at sentencing in June.
All right, Joe, I want to thank you for going over all this with us on another weekly news roundup for the Sullivan County Democrat. Thanks so much.
No problem, and have a great rest of your week.
Well, that's going to do it tonight for the Local Edition. I want to thank all of our guests, and I want to thank you for listening. I encourage you to keep on listening on air on your smartphone or smart speaker. Also, go online, wjffradio.org, for more information about Radio Catskill, and keep it tuned right here. We've got Laura Flanders coming up next, and I will be back with more Local Edition tomorrow night, 6:30.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. Garnet Health, going above and beyond to elevate care every day for every person. Learn more at garnethealth.org. Exceptional lives here. And from The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org.
and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
What is the future of the mind, and how may technology change our brains?
No need for keystrokes or voices. I created this tweet just by thinking it.
So this technology is a way to put almost what is a microphone right on top of the brain.
It's part one of our series, Mind, Body, Spirit. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Wednesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.